is Jared and the GM on ESPN 102.5 The Game. GM, how are you today?
I am outstanding.
We had a very special visitor. We still have a very special visitor today to the radio studio.
Little cutie.
May Safar. Yeah.
Yes, we do.
So, I mean, and she looks exactly like her mom, which we're all thankful for.
Yes, we are.
Not like Ian. So
Amen.
That's, you know, I think a very, but Ian's baby girl, how old? What are we, 4 months now?
Yeah, just over three.
Just over 3 months. May was, I think, 2 days old when PK Subban got traded. I mean, that is how young we are talking. And May just made her first appearance to the studio, seeing dad at work. Seeing dad's two old friends, Floyd and Jared, here today on the show. But in all seriousness, I mean, when she came into the studio, and Floyd, you can back me up on this, she looked right at me and nobody else in the room. And I think it's because she could notice the handsomeness of me. And she was just drawn to that.
I think you find that babies usually look at odd things. They don't look at things they see all the time. So it's anything that's kind of strange or odd or whatever usually catches their attention.
You know what catches my attention?
Now what?
Hot takes. And I want to start the show today on a hot take from a good friend of the show, and that is Corey Curtis. And I was, you know, thinking about the Falcons and what could come up. And it's funny about the Falcons. It's Thursday. We haven't really even touched on the Falcons much this week. And I know you're scared to death of the wide receiver core in Atlanta. I know you're scared to death of Matt Ryan. I know you're scared to death of Grady Jarrett and Deion Jones. I know that you are scared of the Atlanta Falcons. And I'm worried about the Atlanta Falcons because the one thing the Falcons have had the last couple of years since they've been losing after the Super Bowl is it's never been for lack of talent for why they've been losing. So they got tons of that. So Corey Curtis, though, had a hot take. And I'm not exactly sure where this came from, but I was thinking about this. Guess who's on that Atlanta sideline? Guess who's going to be giving the Falcons information? Guess who's going to be able to help the Falcons this week get ready for the Titans?
Malark.
Your old coach.
Yeah, Malark.
Mike Malarkey. And I don't know if y'all have noticed this, but the Titans are 0-2 against teams coached by Terry Robiskie. Last year, Robiskie was the wide receiver coach in Buffalo. Now he's the running backs coach in Jacksonville. And for whatever you think of Terry Robiskie and his at times just terrible play calling, his teams are 2-0 against your team. And now you go up against Mike Malarkey. And Corey Curtis texted me the other day and had a hot take. And you want to know this hot take? I mean, this was a take. Even I said, that's a hot take. And so Corey texted me and said,
define hot take again for me. I think we defined this yesterday, didn't we?
A little crazy.
Okay.
A little crazy take.
Let's get it.
Here's what Corey Curtis told me.
Okay.
He says, as time goes on, does it feel like we're starting to feel as if Mike Malarkey had a lot more to do with the Titans turnaround than John Robinson did? So he's wondering if it's time to start thinking about whether or not Mike Malarkey, who's going to be coaching against the Titans this Sunday, if he had more to do with the turnaround of the team and the franchise than the general manager did. Your thoughts?
I mean, I don't care who the coach is.
Now he follows
Vince Lombardi, Bill Belichick, who. You can't coach a donkey to win the Kentucky Derby now. If you don't have players, you can't win. It's that simple.
Now, Corey followed that text up with, Floyd's head might explode, I know. And I said back, I said, I mean, even I think that's a little wild, and I love Mike Malarkey.
Yeah.
You know, I mean, and I begged for them to not fire Mike Malarkey just because, and to be honest with you, you know, Vrabel, and I know I get on his butt all the time. I got on Malarkey's butt all the time when he was coach. I do that. I get on people's butts. But I'll say this. Vrabel is a fine enough coach for me that when they fired Malarkey, if you told me you're going to get this guy as coach, I mean, I would probably have said just keep Malarkey or whatever, but I wouldn't have jumped up and down. I was worried about firing Malarkey, who was a winning coach, and going out and getting another Wisenhunt. That's what I was worried about. You know, like the guy in Green Bay, who I know is 3-0, but let's just wait on that for a second. And so, to me, I do think Corey Curtis's point does have merit. Not that Mularkey was more important than Robinson, but maybe Mike Mularkey was underrated as coach of the Titans. The fans here absolutely hated the guy. Could not wait to pack his bags for him to leave. And yet he won 9 games 2 years in a row as coach of the Titans. I mean, do you feel like there's a transcendental difference? Or I should say transcendent?
Transcendent. Takes me back to the old 60s right there.
Do you feel like there is a transcendent difference between the Tennessee Titans with Mike Vrabel as the coach than there was with Mike Mularkey as the coach? I mean, the fans still hate the offensive play calling. The fans honestly want them to run the ball more now than they did when Mike was the coach. In fact, that's something they hated about Mike was the fact that Mike wanted to run the ball. Marcus was a better quarterback when Mike was the coach, Mularkey.
Oh, well, the offense was better when Mularkey was here with him. Offensive line was much, much better. Marcus played much, much better. And DeMarco Murray was the running back. He led the AFC in rushing. So, I mean, that gives you a good indication. But I'm not sure many people could have screwed that up. I mean,
the guy before him could have screwed it up.
I don't know. Maybe.
I mean, I think Mike Mularkey was a really important coach for this team, where they were coming from and where he got them to. And I think there's this belief amongst the fans that, well, Mularkey did a good job turning it around from a 3-win team to a 9-win team, but that's really all he could do was win 9 games. And I don't know where we got that from.
I said this last week. I mean, the single biggest event that has changed this team is DeMarco Murray. When we got DeMarco Murray in here, everything got better. The offensive line that we hadn't even heard of all of a sudden was the third-ranked offensive line in the league that even surprised us for half or two-thirds of the year. The quarterback that had a so-so rookie season all of a sudden is lighting it up. He is the best red zone quarterback in the NFL. In the NFL, in his second year. We're all thrilled to death because he is going to be the guy. He's going to lead this franchise. Running back DeMarco Murray, what is it? Led the AFC in rushing. You know, so you go from 3 wins to 9 wins or whatever it is. So, I mean, that's pretty stellar move. I mean, that's just me. That's why I say, I mean, DeMarco was a single bit. We still didn't have receivers. You know, I mean, the receivers were.
I mean, Matthews did a pretty decent job, even though he was off, you know, he's
whoever
crazy.
They were. Tight end played really, really well. But the tight end, the offensive line, the running back, and the quarterback. I mean, they were the impetus for the whole thing. If you had that team now and you had this defense now, even with the receivers back then, but that team exactly and this defense, I mean, you're sitting here, you may not have lost. I mean, and you're on your way. I mean, you are a for real legit team.
So if you had Mularkey's offense and you had this current defense, because the one thing that I'll give Mike Mularkey credit for that nobody else will is he got the same record that Mike Vrabel got with Malcolm Butler, Logan Ryan, and Adoree Jackson. Mike Mularkey got it with Parrish Cox and Jason McCourty.
Well, yeah,
and
but Denoris see, the Searcy. Other side of that coin is
he had DeMarco
Murray.
He
had the best offender, third best offensive line in the league that now is probably the worst to play in the last 10 years. Had a quarterback that was setting records inside the red zone and the best running back in the league.
It was the same offensive line he had.
No. This offensive line's nothing like that.
He didn't have Roger Saffold.
No, he didn't.
He had Quentin Spain.
He didn't have Quentin Spain, who, by the way, is starting for Buffalo.
3-0
Buffalo. 3-0, yeah. So
well, you hated Spain. You can't say that you.
I didn't
you,
hate Spain.
Yes,
I didn't.
I wasn't in love with Spain.
I wasn't in love with Spain, but I didn't hate him. They didn't have Kelly. They didn't have whoever our right guard is. They didn't have any of that, huh?
They had Kelly.
Oh, Kelly didn't play. Let me put it that way.
Actually, Mularkey used Kelly all the time because he'd bring Kelly in to block on, you know, for DeMarco
Kelly
Murray.
Kelly didn't play tackle. Kelly was not the reason they rushed the ball.
No, but Kelly.
Okay.
When Taylor
Lewan got
suspended,
the way it was set up, and the running back were the reason for the whole deal, the whole shooting match. However you want to break it down.
Now, I agree with you that John Robinson has a much bigger deal, is a much bigger reason why the Titans turned around than Mike Mularkey was. But I do think Mike Mularkey did a great job in his 2 years as coach and should be commended for that. The other side
you
of the coin.
You didn't like Mularkey. You know
yes,
what?
Yes, I did.
All we ever heard about was the offense, and Robiskie's the worst play caller I have ever seen.
I hate a Robiskie.
He is the worst ever. Now we're saying, you know, Robiskie is 2-0 against us.
Those are just facts.
Like it's, I mean, I don't. This is. Let me move
Ian,
over.
Was I not always in
over.
Defense of
let
Mike Mularkey to be
so
the Titans coach?
Now you
coach.
Can flop over here.
I think you always said I think Mike is a good coach.
Thank you.
I remember you saying that before.
I have always believed that that man was a good coach. And the other side of it, now I still got on him when he did stupid stuff like fake the punt in Arizona. That was just ridiculous. But, which you of course defended, but I wonder what Marcus is going to think on Sunday when Marcus goes out there and he sees Mike Mularkey on the other side of the field.
I don't, you know what?
Is he going to look at it and think, I wish that guy was still my coach?
He won't even pay attention. He won't even notice. They won't even the closest thing that will happen is they'll walk up and shake hands, give each other a hug, and then they're gone. How's the family? Great. How's yours? Great. Okay, cool. Stay healthy. See ya.
I wonder if it'll be something like a man, I wish that guy was the coach. Because when that guy was coach, I got no criticism. Everybody thought I was a franchise quarterback, and now everything that this team does that's bad falls on my shoulders. And for whatever reason, I disagree with Corey, with the premise of Corey's take that Mularkey had more to do with the turnaround than J-Rob. That to me is, if you get, remember when Mike was interim coach and how bad that team was? Not that it was Mike's fault that they were that bad, but they were so, I mean, they had Antonio Andrews as their starting running back. They were horrible. That team was a train wreck. And I still think Mike is a good coach. And I know you never get a fourth chance in the NFL, but if anyone's going to get a fourth chance in the NFL, it should be Mike. Because I thought he did a good job here. So that's how we're starting.
So full
Corey
of that.
Curtis has a take.
Get out of the way.
That he believes.
Now we're flipping over the other way.
That what?
I get out of the way. There's a wind in here, not tornado.
How am I flipping and flopping on
it's
this?
It's the flip.
I need to know.
Robiskie is 2-0 against us.
That's a
what
stat.
What do you think?
That's a stat.
You don't say it as a stat. You say it as some kind of, Robiskie's 2-0, and you know I always liked Robiskie.
Did I say that? I mean, Ian, I feel like Floyd is just putting words into my mouth today.
It's easy.
I never wanted them to fire Mike Mularkey, and I like Vrabel fine. I never want him to fire Mike Mularkey, and it is a fact that Terry Robiskie's teams are 2-0 against you. That's simple as that. 615-737-1025. Titans take on Mularkey and the Falcons. In hindsight, was firing Mularkey the right or wrong move to make? Plus, what do we make of Robiskie's teams being 2-0 against the Titans? 615-737-1025. We're live from the Wholesale Inc. studio, powered by RumbleOn.com. It's Jared and the GM on ESPN 1025, the game.
Very proud of them. Very proud of. There's a lot of good things we did this year. Probably won't hear about it. But they did. They did a lot of good things, and hated for it to come to an end. I did say that. It was a good story being written, and just sorry that it had to end like it did.
After numerous conversations with Amy, we have decided to part ways with Mike Mularkey as our head coach. I'd like to thank him for all he's done for this team, this community, and wish him the best moving forward.
Mike Mularkey's final press conference. Followed by J-Rob the next morning saying, yeah, we done, break it up, it's over. And within a week later, Mike Vrabel was coach of the Titans. So again, we're starting off on the Corey Curtis take that I literally read verbatim, and I asked if we could use in the show, and that is that he believed that we're starting to feel more like the Titans' turnaround was in large part because of Mularkey, who will be coaching for the Falcons against the Titans on Sunday, than it was John Robinson. Floyd, what do you think of flipping and flopping? You always think everybody flips and flops, right?
Not everybody.
Corey Curtis has called in for clarification.
Yes, you.
Corey Curtis has called in for clarification of his take. Go ahead, Corey.
No. I mean, I want to ask you this question. Okay, I mean, a series of questions.
Me or Floyd?
Okay. Both of you.
Okay.
Because the answers are obvious. Was the offense better the 2 years under Mularkey, or is it better last year and now the first three games of this year?
Floyd?
No, under Mularkey.
Okay. Was the offensive line performance, the protection, the run game, better under Mularkey, or was it better now?
It's better under Mularkey.
Yeah, I mean, it was better, but there's a B to that question.
Okay. Is the quarterback play better under Mularkey, or is it better now?
It was better under Mularkey.
Was this staff hired to make all those things better?
We were
told they were letting go of the last staff to bring in this staff to get more out of the quarterback and of the offense. And we're getting less out of all of them. And we supposedly have better players on offense.
Whoa, now.
You are wrong there. Okay, well, they brought in two new guards.
Supposed
to be better.
I just have one question. You want Kelly? You want Kelly or you want Luan?
Well, you had Luan all of last year.
Well, we don't have him now. You want the right guard?
Fine.
You want the right guard we have now or the right guard we had then? You want the running back
that
we have now?
Their choice.
You want the running back we have now or the running back we had then?
He's their draft pick. They got him in the second round.
That's not the question.
Rather have DeMarco Murray.
Okay,
all day, all night.
That's my thing.
Okay, that's fine. But Floyd, we're on year four here, right?
Yes.
So he's 4 years. He's supposed to have his guys in place. And listen, I'm not sitting here saying John Robinson's a massive failure or anything. I'm just saying this coaching staff was changed because things are they're supposed to get more out of it, and they've had 4 years to get their guys in place. And most of the guys who are still the best guys were here before they got here.
Well, yeah, but I don't agree with any of that. I mean,
they
were supposed to get their guys in place. Kelly is a backup.
Okay.
Right?
I'm cool with that.
Okay, and the right
guard. So you say when Taylor gets in there, it fixes everything, even though with Taylor last year, they gave up close to 50 sacks.
Yeah, the right guard, whoever that may be, and we're still not sure about whoever that may be. I mean, can't play in the league.
You know what? When they get both of those guys in place, if it all smooths out, I will be the first in line to say they nailed it. They got it exactly right. We panicked after four games and after last season. I was dead wrong. I will be glad to admit that. I just don't at this point. I'm not sold that we're going to see a dramatic difference on the offensive line.
Well, I'm not sold we are either. I mean, dramatic. I mean, Taylor coming back will certainly help. It will certainly make you better.
When you get all pro players, it helps. There's no doubt about that.
Yeah, I mean,
most of the stuff we've seen has been on the interior.
Right.
My
point is this, of all of this, and I've told Jerry this three times, the absolute biggest, most earth-shattering event that happened to the Titans in the last 4 or 5 years was bringing in DeMarco Murray. DeMarco Murray made every single part of that offense better. Every single part. Offensive line better, it made the quarterback better, and it certainly made the running game better. And we can say what we want about Derrick Henry, but he is not at this point in time in the league with DeMarco.
I completely agree with what you're saying there, because he helped everything in all phases, running, receiving, accountability.
Right.
He established a way to practice and to train. He could play all three downs. He was a great player. And as you saw in the second year under Mularkey, the offense wasn't quite as good. And why was that?
Because
DeMarco was hurt a lot.
He was banged up.
Corey, I got to say this. I appreciate you doubling down on that take. I appreciate that. And I appreciate you two getting into it because it meant I didn't have to do anything.
You know, we're not into it. We're just discussing things.
This is a discussion.
Corey,
it doesn't have to mean I don't have to be right, and I don't have to be wrong. I think it's worth discussing at this point, because you know and I know, I think Mike Mularkey did a good job, too.
I did a great job.
I think J-Rob does a good job, too. But the point is, this team's 1-2, and if they were 2-1 or 3-0, we probably wouldn't even be having this discussion.
Yeah,
no. True. Corey Curtis, Corey, we'll talk to you tomorrow.
Thanks,
is
Corey.
Is it your birthday?
It is my birthday.
Well, there you go. There's your birthday present. I gave you an hour radio.
The big 3-0. I'm now Floyd's age. Thank you, Corey.
All right. Later, guys.
Yep. Thanks.
Okay. So I appreciate Corey doubling down on that take right there. Now, this is my thing, and I kind of said this yesterday, and that is that with Robinson and Vrabel and Mariota and Mularkey, you can look at each individual guy, and I can sit on either side of the table and make an argument, and you have claims on both sides of the table for every single one of those guys. You know, like with DeMarco Murray, we can all sit around the same table and say, DeMarco, for that first year that DeMarco was here, he was a bad, bad man. He was bad.
Right.
And he made that team better, and everybody agrees with that. But like with Vrabel, Vrabel doing a good job. Is Vrabel doing a bad job? We can have that kind of same discussion. Did Mularkey do a great job? We can have that discussion. Robinson, you know, he's missed on some picks, but the team's a whole hell of a lot better than we took over.
And the thing is, when you start comparing, especially when you start comparing coaches, if you can't compare the personnel, then you're really not comparing the coaches. You're comparing the teams. You know, you're comparing how they are now. How many injuries did they have? What did they... You know, what was their season like? What was the division like? So, I mean, it's just not the comparisons. People want to do it all the time, and to do it fairly is almost impossible. And it's certainly for a lot of people.
That me and Corey?
Just a lot of, you know, I mean, you get in lengthy discussions with lifelong football guys that will disagree on this kind of stuff. So, you can imagine discussion with.
So you're a lifelong football guy who could have this discussion with Nick Saban. So is you really?
And it
are
would
you
be,
like?
And
am I really going to have this discussion with Jared Stillman?
Be, but I'm not sure the discussion carries the same weight. But it's you and I.
Okay, right to your phones, because I appreciated Corey calling in to double his take and him and Floyd going at it, because that's what we like. Again, Mularkey coaches against the Titans on Sunday for the first time since he's been fired as coach of the Titans. In hindsight, was firing Mike Mularkey the wrong move to make? And also, Terry Robiskie's teams are 2-0 against the Titans. And what kind of insight will Mularkey be able to give the Falcons? We'll get to all of that, but we're right to your phones on this next. 615-737-1025. Jared the GM. It's ESPN 1025, the game.
Normal wear and tear of a season. And when there's injuries with your quarterback, you've got to be smart with them. You need them every week. And Marcus played through a lot of bangs and bumps. You know, I appreciate his... I mean, he's a tough quarterback. He's very tough. But, you know, obviously it did affect us.
That was Mike Mularkey in his final press conference. And I'll say this about Mike Mularkey, who will coach against the Titans for the first time on Sunday with Atlanta. He loved Marcus now. He loved Marcus. He would have done anything for Marcus. And it's funny because, you know, this coach now, Vrabel, I don't feel like he loves Marcus the same. But I promised right to the phones. So unless you guys want to say something,
no.
To the phones we go. Alvin is going to kick us off today on Jared and the GM. Go ahead, Alvin.
Hey, I just wanted to talk about why do y'all not feel like John Robinson? Now, he did good with DeMarco Murray, bringing DeMarco Murray in. But other than that, what has he done? You bring in Simmons and sitting. We need the Patriots. We ain't got time right back there. We ain't got time for players to sit. We need impact players. Why do y'all not think that John Robinson is the problem right now? You let go of a coach that took you to the playoffs. So what about now?
Thank
they
you
ain't even fighting hard for him like they fight hard for Mularkey. They ain't fighting hard for Braver or whatever his name is. They ain't fighting hard for him.
Thank you for the call, Alvin. Floyd, your thoughts.
I'd say he's not a fan. Number one, what's his name again?
Alvin.
No, I'm talking about this one.
Oh.
The head coach's name. What was his name again?
Yeah, exactly. my thing with John Robinson is this, right? Like, first of all, I think a GM, I think because football is so in the moment, right? Like, everyone spends so much time in the offseason getting their hopes up for their team that when you lose a game, you have to sit with that for 7 days. So you start off 1-0, and everybody loved Arthur Smith. And now everybody's down on Arthur Smith. I think with John Robinson, when you're truly evaluating a general manager, unless the general manager is just a complete moron, I feel like you need a solid 5-6 year window in order to evaluate whether or not the guy's any good. And I just personally look at it, and I look at the defense, and I think, man, this defense is a lot better than it was the day that John Robinson stepped. I mean, they had Michael Griffin and Parrish Cox and Jason McCourty starting on defense when John Robinson got here. That's how bad it was. And now you've got all-pro safeties and guy Vaccaro, incredibly underrated. And, you know, I mean, they are a good team now on defense. I do believe John Robinson struggles with the offensive line. That is, you know, Floyd, you had your bugaboo wide receiver. His might be with the offensive line. He does not have a clue when it comes to drafting on the offensive line. That I am convinced of. You know, and then I...
Well, who's he drafted on the offensive line? He's drafted an all-pro right tackle. And he's drafted...
An all-pro 3 years ago.
Whenever
I mean, we got to get out of our mind. Jack Conklin is not an all-pro. Right,
what do we get it out of our mind? We're talking about malarkey. Get what out of your mind? I mean, he was an all-pro. He was the best right tackle in the league. So, and you drafted an all-pro safety who was a third rounder. You know, now you've got beyond that, you know, you've got, I mean, just look at the safeties, for example. You got two draft choices that are both players, and you got somebody you brought in as a free agent who is a player. So, I mean, I don't think there is any doubt but that the team is better. There's also no doubt that you don't hit on every player, but no GM in the league hits on every player. And the better your team gets, the harder it is to hit. And so, you know, you look at this draft and you say, okay, we've got a safety that's playing. We've got a receiver that's playing. We got a DT that's hurt that we're hoping can come out of it. Who else?
This current draft? Hooker?
Yeah. No, got Hooker.
Oh, well, then all the other guys.
Oh, Long and Long. You got a guy that's playing, a seventh rounder, who's playing as a backup and a special teamer, which is what he should be doing.
So, like, to me, again, I go, I think John Robinson does an okay job. I think he's fine. He, offensive line has been a problem for him as GM. You know, that's
well,
the one thing.
Well, they haven't gone there, though.
No, but, I mean, you know, he signed Saffold. Saffold's been a disappointment through three games.
Well, I'm not worried about Saffold.
He gets rid of Klein and doesn't replace Klein. You know,
that was,
and
that's an issue. But he thought Panfil and Nate Davis was going to do it. Well,
and he thought wrong.
Both of those guys fell off the face of the earth, and I don't know where they went. I mean, we haven't even
I think Nate Davis is starting on Sunday, by the way.
I don't know. But I don't know where Panfil is. I mean, I know. I remember seeing him in preseason.
Yeah.
But
then the week of the Cleveland game, he hurt his knee or something.
I haven't seen him again, and he's gone. So, I mean, they brought some guys in who have been dinged up and have not played. I agree 1,000%.
So, like the Simmons thing, how can we be mad about Jeffrey Simmons? We have no idea how good Jeffrey Simmons is going to be. The one thing I know is when he's walking around on the field when we're at training camp and practice, and that's a big mamma jamma now. Yeah. That is a big, big mamma jamma. And, I mean, it's like Gary Danielson said at SEC Media Days. He said if Simmons returns fully from the knee, he'll be one of the best players in the defensive line in the NFL. He says if he doesn't, he'll be a solid run player, probably not dynamic against the pass, but he'll be a solid run DT if he doesn't recover from the knee injury. If he does, Danielson thinks he'll be one of the best defensive linemen in the league. I'm willing to take that risk. So, you know, when you see him in real life, he is a big mamma jamma boy. I'll tell you what now. Let's go to Steven, who's up next on Terry Robiskie's 2-0 record against the Titans. Go ahead, Steven.
Hey, guys. If the Falcons win this weekend, which I think they will, I can hear you now, Jared, talking about Malarkey and Robiskie being 3-0 against the Titans. Well, no, their bosses. Boss would be 3-0 against the Titans. They would not. They're position coaches, not coordinators, not head coaches. The janitorial staff at 102.5 The Game has no more impact on Floyd and the Millennial being the best afternoon drive time radio show than Robiskie and Malarkey having a damn thing to do with being their teams being 3-0.
Robiskie got a game ball last year when Buffalo beat the Titans. I'm just saying. I mean, I don't know.
Amy Adams Strunk got a game ball when they beat the Browns.
And she plays a very big role in that. Thank you, Steven. She plays a very big role. I'll just say this. I have no idea what the impact of Terry Robiskie against the Titans is. They're 2-0 when his teams play those teams. You've been an assistant coach. You've gone from one team to another. You know what it's like to go in the meeting rooms and say, look, now let me tell you something. I know about Johnny Joe here, and Johnny Joe likes to this or Johnny Joe don't like that. But I'm sure the impact is not transcendent. I mean, Terry Robiskie is not why Nick Williams dropped the football and you lost to Buffalo.
Yeah, I mean, the truth is anybody going to another club, unless you were an offensive coordinator for 10 years with that club, you really don't know a great deal about what you know, everybody. Now, if you're a running back, you know about the running backs. I can tell you about the running backs.
Well, Terry was OC here.
For a couple of years, year and a half or whatever it was. I mean, so, you know, I mean, he wouldn't even know half the players that he's going to see this weekend. You know, I mean, a bunch of those guys will be new guys to him. So but it's way, way overblown. That's like players. You know, you bring in a player, everybody goes, oh, they're going to tell them the offense, or they're going to tell them the defense, or they're going to – no. They might help them a little bit with personnel. Who's really fast? Who's not? Who's tough? Who's not? Who's, you know, things like that. But are they going to tell you anything that's going to help you, you know, make a difference in the game? No. Way, way overblown.
I do think Malarkey will have some insight on the Titans going into this game.
Okay.
I mean, the guy was head coach for 3 years.
Okay.
He knows these players.
I can understand. I can see. Your experiences would teach you that, and that would lead you in that direction. So I can see why you'd have a sound opinion on all that.
Ian, do you think that Mike Malarkey will have at least a little bit of insight about the Titans?
Why does he bother asking me questions?
The only thing I can maybe think of is he knows Arthur Smith pretty well. Not that he knows Arthur Smith's, you know, play calling tendencies because he's never really done it, but maybe that, and maybe some of Mariota's tendencies as far as what he likes to read.
I will say this: last year you played Baltimore. Dean Pease came from Baltimore, and they sacked you 11 times. So it's not like Dean helped you on the other side of that. So maybe there is something to Floyd's opinion there. Adam is up next on Mike Malarkey. Thank you for calling. Go ahead, Adam.
Yeah. So we had at one point in our organization, it was Tommy Smith was the main guy, and then we had Mike Reinfeldt. We had a lot of really bad leadership, and I think that change had a lot to do with bad leadership. And not to say Malarkey was a bad guy, because actually I love Malarkey. I thought he was an awesome coach and a great leader. And if you see Brabel give a press conference and see Malarkey give a press conference, it seems like Malarkey cares more about it than Brabel does. But with that being said, I think that change was made because it's like, all right, we got an awesome GM. He wants his own coach who is a Patriot guy, who's somebody that he trusts, is a winner. So I don't think it was so much on Malarkey. I think he was just, you know, kind of a casualty of the situation. And I hate that, and I still hope he gets another shot at it one day. But happy birthday, by the way. But I don't think it's on him, man.
Thank you for the call. Floyd, do you think there's some truth to that, that Malarkey was a casualty of the situation more so than fired for his performance as coach?
He was absolutely a casualty of the situation. There's total reason.
And see, that bothered me as much as anything else with the entire situation, the entire Mike Malarkey getting fired situation.
It was his choice. You know, you can, whichever way you want to go.
I mean, that's like Ian Rappaport said that Robinson and Steve Underwood had gone to Malarkey the week before he got fired and offered him an extension. So if you sign the extension, right, then you get the money even if they fire you. But, you know, I mean, to me, this is what bothered me about that at the end of the day is John Robinson wanted his coach, and Mike Vrabel was his coach. He wanted a Patriot coach, and that was his guy, Mike Vrabel. And I guess I'm okay with it to a point because I'd like synergy between the two. But I always appreciated the fact when you were GM, as a fan looking on the outside, who was in high school at the time, so that tells you, you know, how much I... But when you were GM, I always felt like there was somebody there who challenged Jeff Fisher. Now, I didn't know that you were the guy in charge of picking the players and that you kind of gave them to Jeff Fisher, but the way it felt to us fans was it was like you and Jeff were not always in agreement with everything, but that ultimately you guys made a lot of good decisions and the Titans won a lot of football games. And then you left and they hired Mike Reinfeldt and it felt like they were going and getting a yes man to Jeff Fisher. Whatever you want, Jeff. We need a running back. Okay, Jeff. And I don't know if that's true or not because I wasn't in the building and I, you know, don't know that guy. But that's the way it felt. And here, that's kind of the way it feels here is it's like Robinson didn't fire Malarkey because Malarkey didn't do a good job. Robinson fired Malarkey because he wanted his own coach. And that's great and all that. But to me, if the guy's a good coach and he's doing a good job, you shouldn't fire him.
I don't agree with any of your premises. So,
you know, it's funny.
I'm holding back.
Is my dad and I, and I was in high school at the time, but when you left the Titans, I remember we were talking about it in the kitchen at our old house. And I remember telling, like, we were talking and we're like, this is a terrible decision to let go of Floyd Reese. A terrible decision. And we didn't even know. Like, I didn't know you or anything like that. Like, and in hindsight, it was probably the single worst decision the organization has ever made. So I don't think that firing Malarkey rises anywhere near to the level of that. But it certainly, to me, the worst decisions in the organization of the Titans are as follows. 1, letting Floyd go. 2, not sticking with Vince Young. And 3, drafting Chance Warmack in the top 10. Those are just 3 just egregious. I can't believe it. You got to be kidding me. And the Vince Young thing is tied into Norm Chow because hiring him as offensive coordinator, which is kind of Floyd's fault, that was just terrible as well. 615-737-1025. Why the Vols can just, no matter what they do, not help themselves. We'll get to that later today, as well as also a Preds thought. It's Jared and the GM on ESPN at 102.5 The Game.
Our football team is 100 times better than it was this time last year, okay? All right, and our guys are working hard. We're stronger. We're more physical. But when it comes to having success winning a football game, you can't turn the ball over, and you have to create turnovers, you know? And that's something that has hampered us in our 3 losses. Our guys are working hard. We're getting better on the offensive front. Our tight ends are playing winning football. We've got to be able to get the balls to our skill players, okay? Be more consistent there.
That was Jeremy Pruitt. You know what my dad's reaction to his 100 times better comment was?
What?
100 times 0 is still 0. So maybe that's what Jeremy's referring to. This is what gets me about that, right? Is, and I think that when I listen to Jeremy Pruitt say that with the, you know, we're 100 times better, all right? Now, what we can't do is we can't turn the ball over and not get turnovers and expect to win ball games. All of that, right? I get what he's saying. He's saying, we're a better football team. We're just screwing it up on Saturdays, and we got to coach them to not screw it up with turning the ball over the way they've turned the ball over, which is fair enough. But I think sometimes as a coach, you got to understand how what you say is going to land. And I feel like Jeremy Pruitt just put Tennessee right back at the forefront of being the laughingstock of the SEC. I'm not going to say college football because there's some really bad teams out there that are, like Michigan, I think right now is kind of, they're not the laughingstock. We just are wondering why they're so bad. And then, no offense, there's UCLA, and there's Florida State, and so there's some other proud programs out there that look terrible right now. But, I mean, Tennessee, everybody is laughing at Tennessee. Vandy is 0-3 and laughing at Tennessee. And it's one thing to lose to Georgia State. You lose to Georgia State, everybody laughs at you. You lose to BYU, you're 0-2. I feel like everybody laughs at you. Now you come out and say you're 100 times better after you lose by 30. Everybody in the league is laughing at Tennessee. And I don't know if it matters or not, Because if Tennessee is 100 times better and they go out there and they kick Kentucky's butt and they kick Mississippi State's butt and they kick Missouri and all those back-end teams that are on the back of their schedule, they kick their butts, maybe it's not a big deal and we'll say, you know what, Pruitt was right. But man, oh man, is everybody laughing at Tennessee right now.
I don't, you know, I don't know. How do you define everybody? You talking about fans?
Oh, yeah.
Because
I mean, this is coaches, champions of life level stupid.
Coaches don't laugh about stuff like that because every coach has been there, you know, so it's not comical to them. But, you know, fans are going to, but, you know, what are you going to do about it? There's nothing you can do about it. What are you going to, so what? You know, you're 1-2 or whatever you are. I mean, people are laughing anyway. So it's, you know, in his world, he doesn't care. I mean, he's not talking to us anyway, you know, so I mean, he's in a whole different world right now.
I'm wondering if 100 times better is champions of life level embarrassing.
Well, again, that's not for public.
Was champions of life for the public or was that for the players?
No, I'd say it was for public. but what he's doing, he's talking to the players. And he's letting them know that, hey, I know we're not winning, guys, but I'm watching you and we're studying you and you know, you're doing this better and that better. And, you know, that some of the things that we're trying to coach up, you're doing 100% better. So, you know, is that the finished product? Nope. Do we have a long way to go? Yep. But you're still a lot better than you were this point in time last year.
I want to put up a poll on Twitter that says, what is dumber, champions of life or 100 times better or 3 equal? Like, and I don't know. We'll keep it up for 3 hours. For the end of the show. This is not going to be a whole day poll. But I got to tell you, I believe that maybe Pruitt's doing the right thing and I'm stupid and this will come back and Tennessee will say, hey, we never stopped believing. Our coach never believed. And now we've shown you that we're 100 times better. I don't know. But I don't know. To me, I hear it and I'm thinking about what LSU is doing and Auburn's doing and Alabama and Georgia and everybody else. And I'm thinking, oh, my God, Tennessee's got a bye week this week. So, you know, rest up. Vol fans don't have to, you know, wear the paper bags on their head this week. They can watch football. And now their coach comes out and says that. And it feels like.
Well, he's got to learn that. I mean, this is why you end up with the Bill Belichick and Nick Saban. You know, you get a young head coach that jumps out and says something like that. And he's going to be criticized to death. So, you know what? He quits talking about it. And then everybody gets mad because he's not talking about it. So, I mean, it's a learning process. And I'm sure he's
Why can't
he's
they just
learning.
Be like you and just talk a lot but don't say anything?
Well, I mean, they can do that too, but they got things to do. I had time to waste.
When you were GM? Predators last night. I thought Preds win, but to me, a couple things. Number one, Matt Duchene. I know it's early. But he's out there playing some ball now. He looked great Saturday night against Tampa. Last night, did you see the goal off of Ekholm's face?
I saw, not a review, but a
replay.
Replay. Jeez.
What'd you think about Duchene on that one? I mean, dodging and weaving and puck off of Ekholm's face into the net. He can shoot it off of anybody's face he wants if it goes in the net, except maybe Forsberg because they need him. But I absolutely love that. And number two, Dan Lambert's power play right before the end of the second period. Dan Lambert puts that puck in the back of the net. And even though it's preseason, I like what I see from Dan Lambert's power play, which Adam Vingan wrote an article in The Athletic, which I didn't read. But I read the headline, and the headline said, the Predators' power play has to be better because it can't be worse, which I think we all agree with.
Right.
I think there's a chance the power play is markedly better this year than it was last year because they added Duchene. But more importantly, the power play coach wasn't like Duchene scored this one. This was Craig Smith, and Craig Smith made a great play. And so I know, you know, like if the Titans were to – I mean, we got all excited about Adam Humphries after the first preseason game, and Adam Humphries so far has kind of been whatever at wide receiver. But I'm excited about the power play next week when they start real games because you take the Predators last year, you put in power play goals, they might be the best team in the league.
Well, it was nice to see a power play goal. That's two games and, what, two, three goals?
Yeah.
Three goals in two games.
Dan Lambert.
So, yeah, so that's a giant improvement. That is big.
I put out on Twitter, you know what the abbreviation for power play is, right?
Yes.
Okay, so did you see this, Ian? I put out on, I got a lot of flack on Twitter. I put out on Twitter, I said, I know it doesn't count, but Dan Lambert's abbreviation for power play looks aight. And so a lot of people were like, hey, keep that thought to yourself, Stillman.
Yeah. That's
TMI, dog. TMI.
Dan Lambert's power play looks all right.
Too much information.
Dan Lambert's power play looks all right. We'll see what they do on the PP this year. 615-737-1025. Jared the GM. Coming up next, apparently the NFL owners, we know they want an 18-game schedule in the upcoming CBA. Apparently, according to some sources, the owners have already backed off of that request with a new request. We'll get to that next. It's Jared and the GM on ESPN 102.5, The Game.